Mr. Aldreal Seven, we're talking about your time on HMS Caron, and we've gone through the first sort of major action. What other incidents do you recall from your early period with Caron?
Well, a lot of the experiences are still very difficult to pick up information on. A lot of people, my shipmates I meet, can't remember a lot. If I trigger their memory, they can sometimes recall something. And finding reports from the PRO and elsewhere is very difficult. But the next one that I can remember is we were part of a strike off Norway. I can't remember the ships. I know there was either one or two aircraft carriers. And we were with other destroyers, which, again, without finding the information, I don't know the names of. I remember that we set out from Scupper Flow.
This would be December.
This, I think, that because it's difficult to get information on it and memory doesn't give you times, it was any time. It could be before the end of the year or it could be just after the end of the year. So, now, I can't help out much with that at present. But we set out, and it was quite rough. I know it's quite rough for being seasick.
What was it like in rough weather on a destroyer?
Well, it was very uncomfortable because not so bad when you're on watch, as I said before. If you're on the lookout, then it's not too bad. You're out in the fresh air. You've got other things to think of, to take your mind off it. So, but if you go down to the mess decks, if you dare to eat or drink, then it's pretty uncomfortable because you've got others that are down there and are seasick. And therefore, you've got the stench of smoking, seasickness, bodies. It's pretty uncomfortable.
What did you think of the size of the waves and that sort of thing? I mean, did you find it frightening?
Well, I can give you an idea of that. While I'm most of the time leaning on the starboard side, not actually being seasick, but being stopped from being seasick from the fresh air, really. But many occasions you're just standing there looking at the green sea, and the green sea then becomes the wall of a room. It's perpendicular, almost. And then the next thing you know is that that's gone, and you've got the sky. At the same time that's happening, the ship is bobbing up and down. And what is even more comfortable is if you are in the mess deck, when you hit a rough sea, then first of all you raise up in the air quite a few feet, but the next thing, that sea is gone, and you come down with an almighty crash and hit the sea again. And this happens quite often. It's every few minutes or seconds this happens. There's no stop to it. All you're hoping is in the end that you're going to get back to port.
Did the mess deck stay dry, or was it a wet ship?
No. There was one occasion, and I think it was around this time, when I was going to sleep in the mess deck, and I'd come off watch, and I still had on what we called a zoot suit. It's a waterproof suit with K-pop lining, and it was quite good. But when you went on watch, and when you came off watch, you were too tired. You couldn't take that off, and you were too comfortable with it on. And I went to sleep on the floor of the mess deck underneath the tables, which is a place where very often people did. I'm laying down there underneath these tables, got a fast asleep, with water lapping around me, apparently. And the officer of the watch always walks around the mess decks to see everything's all right. And apparently he walked through and he saw me asleep lying in this water. And he sort of pushed me and said, well, don't lay there because it's wet. And I'm afraid I replied in a rude manner to him, and he walked away. Said no more about it. I mean, this was the attitude of the officers. They never really stuck to protocol, if you like to call it, and that was it. But the Mystics were very often swimming with water when you're at sea, really rough. Not very deep, only a matter of about an inch, but it was enough to be uncomfortable. But if you wanted to sleep and you were not prepared to sling your hammock, you either slept on the tops of the lockers, because it was little cushions on each locker which went all the way along from one end of the mess to the other, so you could sleep on there. But if you slept on there, like I did at times, you laid on the lockers and your right arm, or whichever arm was on the outside, curled over you, held on to the woodwork, which you would normally lean against, and you went to sleep like that. So you were not that comfortable, but you did at least sleep.
And this trip to Norway, or the strike force, mm-hmm. did anything particular happen, or was it just rough weather you remember?
Well, if it's the one that I can recall with any amount of recall, when we got to near to Norway, and it was really very rough, one of these escort carriers, I got an idea there were two, but I remember the one, when the aircraft took off, and there's a rather difference of opinion on what aircraft they were. I thought they were biplanes, swordfish, but I would not like to say that is true. People have said it's something else. But when they took off, the escort carriers were almost 45 degrees. How they managed to take off, I just don't know. But we were there not only to protect the carriers from attack, but we were there also to act as what is called a crash boat. So if the aircraft did crash or in any way, we would have to try and pick up the survivors. Well, I remember we had to stay around, of course, till they came back from their bombing trip or torpedoes or whatever it was, or mine laying. And when they came back, I saw very few of them manage to land. Quite a few of them crashed, and we weren't able to pick up. The sea was too rough, and we were not in a position. So they must have lost at least one or two of the pilots from that run. And then we just came back. I think it was probably curtailed because the weather was too rough, and probably because they were losing pilots. But then we came back to Scupper again.
What's the next thing? Any other missions you remember?
Well, from that, just talking about trips ashore, perhaps, to Scupper. The only place we could go to while we were at Scupper Flow, in most cases, was ashore to the canteen there. Now,
where was that? Which one?
There is only one there. Which is the canteen of Scupper Flow. It's in Scupper Flow. It's not at one of the islands. There's nothing else there really but this canteen, which is the naval canteen.
And what was that like?
Pretty ropey, I think, really. You could get beer there, which from my memory and many other people's memory was not really worth having, but it was something that you had. I believe they had shows there were put on for people, but I can only remember going there about once. I'd rather stay on board than to have gone ashore. But the other case is, while we were up there, once in a while you were going to the capital. Now, I can't remember the capital now. I shall have to recall that later on. But we would have a trip laid on with one of the boats, a Liberty boat, that would take us to the capital there, just for a day, and then it'd bring us back
the
again.
Captain of the Orkney Isles.
Captain of the Orkneys.
I can't remember it.
I can't remember it myself, but I should probably remember it or look it up. But that was quite nice. It was a place to shop. You bought things like handkerchiefs, to send home to mother or to girlfriends or anything like that. And it was a reasonable day out. I only went there once, and it was worth going. You didn't often have the opportunity because it wasn't in the flow itself. It was the other side of the island, if I remember right. It wasn't Lurik. It was something like Lurik is the...
Did you find life in the Scapa Anchorage boring?
Yeah, very. The only thing you could do was if you went on shore leave was this canteen. You stayed on board and wrote letters. Or there was one time when we was up there where there was a bit of a flurry on. Somebody had reported that they thought there was one of these miniature submarines got into the flow. And I remember ourselves anyway, I don't know about one of the other ships, our torpedo men were going round for a number of hours with small detonators. They were just throwing them over the ship's side and they'd go off bang. They weren't depth charges as such, but they were, I suppose, something purposely made for the job, and nothing ever happened, and it was probably a false alarm anyway.
But so, were you in Scapa a lot during this period?
Well, we spent one whole period in Scapa, and that was at the beginning, and this is where we were involved in the Bulinist incident. This led on from our working up period. After that, it was another incident off to Norway, and that was kept secret for many years. It was, I believe, called an operation called Spellbinder.
Is this not the one you just told me about?
No.
Another one.
It was an actual operation which involved quite a lot of activity. There was the Apollo, which is a fast mine layer, and ourselves, the Charon, and another one which I didn't know at the time, but it was HMS Zelius. Now, we were to escort this mine layer across Norway, and we were not told this, of course, till we'd been outside Scapa Flow for about an hour. Now, skipper then called over to Tannoy, and we were only part of the force. The other part of the force consisted of one or two aircraft carriers, a cruiser, other destroyers, and the whole aim was for us, the small force with the two destroyers and the Apollo, to carry out a clandestine operation in the Leeds off Stavanger. The other force went further down to Egersund, and their main aim was to attack a small convoy, which I believe was coming up from Egersund to Stavanger. Now, the whole idea for them was to carry out such a lot of noise and activity that nobody would notice that the Apollo was laying mines across the Leeds at the Stavanger. So, around about 12 o'clock at night.
And when was this? Was this still December or is this January?
No, this was January. January the 11th and 12th. 10th, 11th and 12th of January. I haven't been able to check thoroughly on all this information yet because it's still
it's
in the...
It's more what you remember anyway, yeah.
Right. And we were just approaching Egersund, and it's near about 12 o'clock at night. Now, we was all closed up for action stations, so I was in the TS on the phones. And it, I can remember that we got near, and we were told to stand by for action. And the next thing, because we were going between two minefields, I believe, so our ASDIC operators had to be on the sound for the noise of picking up mines. But I'm not sure about this. anyway, the next thing I know was that I'm hearing from my people on the guns, the telephone people on the guns, and one of them said to me, "Cool, you can see lights here from the shore. It looks almost like somebody lighting up a cigarette." And then from one of the other guns, I heard, "Cool, look, you can see headlights of a car, or a lorry or something." And so it went on. And then a few minutes later, we heard the skipper say, "Right, they're going to start the lay, and we've got to start moving." Now, her whole aim seemed to be that while the Apollo was carrying out this lay that takes a slow speed at 20 minutes to half an hour and can't really be aborted, it's got to be carried out, and we were going closer to the shore, ready in case they picked us up. And our whole aim, it seemed to be, which we were not told, and I found out after, if we were picked up, we were to steam up and down, ourselves and the other destroyer, steam up and down, firing all our guns and all sorts of things to try and take the heat off the Apollo, which was doing the dirty work, really. And when this started, I heard people from the guns again saying, "Cool, there's a lot of noise and fireworks going on further down the coast somewhere. Don't know what's happening there." So anyway, we just steamed up and down waiting for something to happen. And must have been for about 20 minutes or half an hour. And nothing actually happened, except I understand that our ship's siren blew. Well, it shouldn't have done. Everybody keeping quiet, walking around softly, nobody allowed to smoke. And our chief stoker, our chief engineer, had been keeping the boilers fully steamed up, because if there'd been any action, we would have had to go tearing up and down at full speed, making a lot of noise. But he kept them too fired up, and it blew the safety valve, which made a lot of noise. Of course, we're trying to do a quiet, clandestine operation. So anyway, that caused no problem. And the next thing I know, I'm getting all these reports from the people from the guns saying that they can see it from shore. "Can't be far away," they're saying. "It's all these lights." And you say, next thing we know that we're told everything's over, we can go. So we steamed out and we came across the Apollo, and the Apollo just took off. She can do 40 to 45 knots. And he apparently sent a signal, "See you in Scupper," in a little while. And we then came back at a fairly fast speed, but we were also told that we were not going at our full speed because we understood that there might be torpedo bombers sent after us. They might have sussed us out, and but it never happened, and we got back to Scupper Flow okay. But the bigger force further down at Egersund were attacking this convoy at the same time as we were doing this, so that all attention was drawn to them instead of us. So it apparently was a successful operation. So all that went off quietly. No trouble.
And that was January 10th to 12th.
No, that's right.
45.
Yes.
What's the next thing you remember, operation?
Well, I'm not sure whether we did any more on that coast, whether we took another aircraft operation or not. I can't. But we came back now to the home fleet proper, I think, Western Approaches part of the home fleet. And our main role then was working out from the Clyde, Greenock, and from Liverpool and Londonderry. And the main role with that was escorting the ships that we called the Monsters. They were the biggest.
Now this was January onwards.
This was from January onwards. This was all the big ships, all the big troopers.
And you called them the monsters?
The monsters. Called them the monsters. That's how we knew them on the Karen anyway, the monsters. Because they were the bigger ships. So the Queen Mary, the Queen Elizabeth, we took out from the Clyde. And we, one at a time, of course, we'd say take out the Queen Mary. Now, we'd know it's the Queen Mary anyway, because it only had three funnels with the Queen Mary. And when we took out the Queen Elizabeth, it was with two funnels. But we would, there would always be two of us as escorts. There's ourself and one of the other flotilla. Or if we were not on it, it would be two of the flotilla anyway. There's always two ships of the six destroyer flotilla that would take any of the monsters out. Now, very often it would be ourselves and HMS Cavalier, which is down at Chatham now. Now, we would take her down the Clyde and take around up by Ireland. And all the time we would be doing an Aztec sweep for U-boats. At that time, the U-boats were operating close inshore, away from the Atlantic and around our coast. So we would take her out, one each side of her and probably in front of her. Now, if either one of us picked up an echo, we would immediately hive off and try and attack that contact, whereas the other one would carry on with the with our charge, keeping her covered. Now, we would only drop a pattern or two at any contact we found to keep it down, which I found later on was the real reason, and then we would catch up with our escort and the two would carry on. Now, this was, we were with her till we reached a point just northwest of Ireland, when I would assume she would pick up her fastest speed by then. The three of us would zigzag all the way anyway. From the time we left Greenock, we would zigzag down the Clyde and all around. The zigzag was always different and was always set by the Commodore, whoever it was, in charge of the Queen Mary. But we would know what zigzag to follow. This tended to be a bit hairy, actually, because if you took the wrong zigzag, as we know, the Cuirassier got hit by or hit the Mary long before that. So it could be wrong. You could make a mistake. But when we reached the point where we let her go, she carried on, as far as you know, all the way across the Atlantic, zigzagging on her own. Now, usually on the way back to the States, she would be carrying wounded GIs, aircraft people from here that would be doing training in Canada, and all things like that. Now, when we left her, we would either pick up another one at round about the same point, which could be the other of the Queens, for instance. And if it was, we would take her back to the Clyde, and that would be the same thing, zigzag all the way back to the Clyde. And if it was the other sister ship, then it would be coming back full of GIs. And there would be up to 15,000 GIs if it was summertime or that time of year, winter. It might have been less, it might have been only 12,000. But that is also plus the crew of that Queen Mary. So
it was an important job.
It was an important job, and I wouldn't say we saved lives, but I think we could have prevented many lives being lost in those cases. bearing in mind probably the Enigma codes had been cracked by that time and it might not be as dangerous as it seemed.
And you were based at Greenock, Liverpool and Londonderry?
Yes. The reason for that is because if there was not anything to pick up when we left that ship, then we would go into Londonderry and wait to get another assignment. So then if we did, then after a day or less in Londonderry, we would go out again to roughly that point. It wouldn't be the exact point from security reasons, but it would be another point around that direction and pick up perhaps the other sister ship and take her back to the Clyde. But it could have been one or two others. Now, it could have been either the Aquitania, which has four funnels, or it could have been one of several. And of course, till a few minutes ago, I could remember the name of one of the others.
And how long were you doing this for?
Really, most of the rest of the European war.
Were there any big contacts with U-boats, or were they just sort of vague gastic?
Well, you'd never know, because really, our role was the safety of the ship. There was no time to stop. Even if we had got a U-boat, we would have had to leave it, I think, because there was too much chance of a lucky attack by a German U-boat on any of those ships.
So you weren't going out for long. You were going
No. It was only short trips. It was a matter of days just going out and days coming back.
So that's why you had the worst of the seasickness for you.
Really, I would imagine so. And the other ships, which were not the Queen Mary, Queen Elizabeth, usually were taken to Liverpool or brought out from Liverpool. And there was one point where, which was interesting, on one ship, talking about U-boats, that we were bringing it into Liverpool, and they were big ships, and coming near to Liverpool, they were slowing down, and the top deck was filled with GIs. We could see them, and we could hear them shouting across at us, and some of them being cheeky, saying, "We don't want you little ships, we're safe enough, you know, without you, we're Americans." And just at that point, which is getting near the lighthouse, I think, where we should really have been able to pick up some mail, we picked up a contact instead, and we hived off quickly and dropped depth charges. And you never see the clear deck of a big ship like that clear so quickly of personnel. I think they changed their mind about the fact they didn't want us little ships. They were on their own. So whether we actually picked up a U-boat, you just don't know, because you picked up wrecks, shoals of fish, and all sorts of things. But we were hoping then to pick up our bag of mail, which would have been sent to that lighthouse. But we were diverted, as we very often were, to somewhere else. And we were not very happy, because that bag of mail would have to go on to somewhere else.
Where, what was it like ashore in the three ports? What would you do?
Well, in Greenock itself, to start with, it was not a lot. You go to the cinema there, and that was about all. So if you were Greenock, which was our main place, actually. That was our main base, more than Liverpool and
Londonderry,
thank you. In most cases, if we could, we'd go to Glasgow. But it's a distance to Glasgow. So if we were only given evening leave, instead of night leave, in other words, if we might have been on a type of standby, so we might have to go out again if we were duty destroyer, which is what would happen. We would, one watch, say starboard watch, you would be given evening leave, that's from tea time till 10 o'clock. So you would at 10 o'clock you would have to be back. If you're not back at 10 o'clock, you're in trouble. And in one particular evening when myself and Mac, my oppo, were going ashore. So it was rough. And we lined up for Liberty Men, and Petty Officer Miles was the petty officer there, and we lined up, and the officer comes around to inspect you. It's unbelievable, but you have to go ashore prior, even if you're in the war zone, you've got to go ashore in correct gear and everything else, lined up. And the officer said, "This is pretty rough, but you should be back at the time, 10 o'clock. If it is really rough and you can't get back by Liberty boat, then it's accepted, you can stay ashore till the morning." So Mac and I looked at each other because we like dancing. And there's nowhere really to dance in Greenock. So when we got ashore, we said, "We're going to risk it."